Hello, I'm Badis, and welcome to the Implement Podcast. This is a podcast where we have great conversations about marketing, growing brands, and what it takes to be a great marketer. If you're interested in keeping up with the podcast episodes and the amazing content we produce at Implement, you should definitely subscribe to our newsletter. Just go to join-implement.com to subscribe. All right, enough self-promo, let's dive into this new episode, and thanks again for tuning in. Welcome everyone to this new episode of the Implement Podcast. Today my guest is Zoe Lefevre. Zoe is Senior Director of Solutions and Content Marketing at Gainsight. Zoe, thank you so much for joining me today on the show. Maybe you could introduce yourself a bit more to the audience before we start.
Sure. Thank you, Badis, for having me. My name is Zoe, and like you said, I work at Gainsight. Gainsight is a customer success platform, and then we also have a product analytics and in-app engagement platform. We're really trying to help companies focus on net dollar retention or net revenue retention, depending on which acronym you prefer. Things like reducing churn, you know, understanding your customer health, and really trying to predict risk and attack it before it becomes a problem is really key to us. So we work with many large enterprise companies on helping them achieve those goals.
Awesome. That sounds really exciting. And I was really excited to talk to you because I think what you're doing at Gainsight is really cool. And I'd love to sort of jump more into that. Like what are some of the key products you guys are selling? And can you tell us more about that?
Yeah. So the main Gainsight product is our customer success platform. It has different components, but the main goal of that platform is really to get a great view of your customer base. In the subscription world, understanding kind of where your customer health is, if you're actually helping your customer achieve the goals by buying your software, allows them to renew. And if you can predict your renewal rates, let's say you have 1, 2, or 3 year contracts, you can predict your revenue, which obviously in the tech space makes your company a lot more valuable. So understanding your customer health, understanding those customer outcomes, are you actually solving that pain, is really critical. You know, in the old days, people bought things and it kind of was in-house, right? Kind of hardware. You installed, it sat somewhere in a cold room and you never thought about those customers again. You made all your money up front and, you know, the deal was closed. But nowadays, people are opting in to renew on an annual, you know, or 3 year basis, depending on the type of software that you sell. And so it's much more critical to keep that relationship healthy throughout the length of that contract. And that's what our platform helps people do.
That sounds really, really great. I mean, it's obviously it's adapting to the to this new business model of, you know, of yeah, of sharing, you know, sharing the outcome and being on a sort of a subscription and like annual renewals, etc. What are some of the KPIs you track in the product? Like, how does it work? Like the product itself.
Oh, so the product itself, a lot of the KPIs include like customer health. So you're looking at everything to kind of look at customer health. Product adoption. So if someone's bought multiple parts of your product, but maybe they're only using one or two, you want to kind of figure out if you have kind of different advocates for your platform, or and maybe a ton of those users have left, or your key executive sponsor is no longer at the company, our platform is going to make you aware of that. It uses company intelligence to really figure out movement. We're also looking at, you know, are you actually getting the benefits that you wanted when you first purchased the software? So we have a really great handoff between sales and the customer success team, because when you buy something, you're telling sales, here are all the problems I have. I'm hoping that your software is going to, you know, solve those problems for me. The CSMs are constantly aware of that. It's actually tracked in our product so that we can measure that in real time, how close you are to achieving those goals. We also use, obviously, customer health scoring, like, you know, red, yellow, and green. And even your green customers, you have to stay on top of, because things like executive sponsor changes, changes in the macro economy, as we've seen in the last year, could totally take a green company to a company that's no longer going to renew or is going to come to you and ask for a kind of pricing concessions. So that's the Gainsight CS platform. On the PX side of our product, we're really looking at product analytics and in-app engagements. So in-app engagements really help people get a better onboarding experience. If you can improve that experience when in the first 30 days of a user using your software, you really have a much better chance of them being happy with it long term. And then with product analytics, you want to understand everything about how people are using your software. Where are they clicking? Are they having trouble finding different features or functions? And we are, our platform allows you to kind of measure that.
I see, marketing,
so I'm not the engineer.
Yeah.
So my KPIs and the metrics I'm looking at are very different, but that's telling me a little bit about the product itself.
Yeah, so is this a product that, marketers could use? Like, or do you have any products for marketers, or is it really more for customer success, sales, and product?
It's mainly for customer success, but we are seeing a growth in customer marketing tools using our product. Because in customer marketing, what you want to do is find your advocates, right? Because it's easier to sell something if you have other people in your industry that love it. And so they're able to use the platform to really identify who's super happy. How can we segment these customers as a group with similar pains and use them to help us grow in that specific segment? They're also looking at it from an adoption perspective. Where are our expansion opportunities? Are people using more licenses that they have purchased? There's an opportunity for us to sell more there. For example, has this company grown and acquired another company? Is there an opportunity for us to sell more there? So customer marketing is also really able to use it for expansion opportunities, as well as advocacy.
Mm-hmm. I see. Yeah, it's really exciting, and I love this field. I'm learning a lot about it. Like I recently talked to the EMEA marketing director for Anaplan. I don't know if you know the company, but it's an exciting industry, and I think is just really starting to grow, and it's really cool. And what do you do at Gainsight? So what are your projects, and what are your responsibilities at Gainsight?
Yeah, so I lead the content and solutions team at Gainsight. So I'm really in charge of putting out all the thought leadership to really help people understand how they could use our product, what new features and functions might be coming out, and help tell some of the stories about what successes people have seen with the product. So I also own some of our new channels, putting out a podcast like we did last year on customer success, as well as our Human First CEO series with our CEO, Nick. So we host that, on LinkedIn Live, I would say every other week. Obviously, in the last year, marketing has changed a lot. Sales teams, especially in technology, are very used to being out in the marketplace to learn, close deals. And being unable to do that in marketing, we've really had to kind of think about where can we be where our customers are since everyone's at home. Hence, starting to do more things on live, doing podcasts, just trying new channels to see what's exciting. Our CEOs also started a Clubhouse chat. We're just trying new things, and he loves to kind of be at the apex of where hot new tech is.
Yeah, that's really cool. So you're doing some, let's say, product marketing, really like product focused with case studies, etc. And yes, some content initiatives like a podcast, etc.
Cool. So we do have a product marketing team, so I partner with them to tell a lot of those stories.
Okay, I see. I think it's interesting to just dive into sort of the you talked about case studies. I think it's a topic that is really interesting to all our B2B listeners out there. Do you have any sort of tips on how to really approach a project like this? What to sort of should you do an interview? Should you video or text, or just text, or how many should you do? Do you have any sort of indications of how to approach this?
Yeah, I think the biggest indicator is to get it in the contract up front. Because the hardest part of customer stories is finding the right customer who's willing to actually tell you their story and share their metrics. Especially if you're working in the tech space, there's a lot of companies that are private. They don't want to share how much they've grown or how much they've reduced churn, because those financials are very private. So that would be like step number one is, get it in the contract, figure out how you partner with sales to make sure that later on when this customer has success, you get to tell that story. The next thing would be, we're definitely trying new formats. So we've typically done in the past, like the standard, you know, digital PDF, 4 pages. This year, we're really trying new video testimonials that we're going to use in our website. And, you know, featuring, we've done interview series with our customers. So like ungated blogs, we have one called the Change the Game series, where we just take different customers who have really kind of done something innovative with our product, and get them to share that and talk about it. So it varies for the kind of story you're trying to tell, but I think that the biggest hurdle with the customer stories is getting the customer to agree to the stories.
And especially for you guys, I mean, for sure, if it's, I mean, otherwise you'd have to do it like, you'd have to do a sort of an anonymous case study, but it has so much less impact to just say like, oh, we have a customer in the, say the cosmetics industry or whatever, but you know, who is it? Like, we want to know.
Of course. So yeah, that's the challenge. The marketing rights is always a fun, you know, a fun sheet to look at. And, you know, you mentioned a company that you talked to, and you know, I'm looking at the marketing rights, like, can I mention them? And it's like, no, I don't, you know, so I can only talk about the companies that are like on the website.
Yeah, I see. No, it's true. I never thought about putting it in the contract from the beginning. It's yeah, I mean, for sure, especially if you have so much like sensitive information that probably will be shared afterwards. Awesome. And so you also mentioned like launching a podcast, and tell us a bit more about that. Like, I'm curious. I we just launched a podcast, obviously, and you know, a few months ago. And how did it go? And how did you sort of approach the process?
Wow. So we actually have someone in our EMEA office who really loves talking to different people. So the first step and kind of, you know, that's not a skill that we had necessarily sitting in the marketing department. You know, a lot of B2B companies are not necessarily doing that. And we have a really lean team. So finding a great producer was step one. And then really working with him on figuring out how to best edit those stories down to like a reasonable time length that people would actually listen to. And then we kind of took it and did other mediums, right? Because if someone may not spend an hour wanting to listen to a podcast, how can we also do a written recap to, you know, hit the main points as well? We're trying to take all of our content and really give it legs across different mediums. So let's take those small bullets out and post those on social media. Let's have a gated piece where people can download and we can actually get attribution. Let's do a short form blog to make sure that we keep the thought leadership, you know, kind of engine running. Let's do a podcast for people who want to sit down and listen maybe at 2x speed. What are the lessons, you know, from that? Let's do video. We're, you know, we want to be in all the mediums where our customers are.
Yeah, so you really made that effort to not just produce it, but give it a chance to be present in so many different formats and distribute it really everywhere you could.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think that's the really the best way to approach it. But it's so time consuming. Like I've published like maybe 25 or 24 episodes so far of this podcast, and we have recorded over 55 now, and we haven't done any promotion yet, like a real promotion, like really actively, you know, just distributing the content more than, you know, just making a few posts on social media. And that work is going to be huge. Like I'm going to actually take a few months, I think, just to work on that. Yeah, but I think it's such a goldmine of content when you think about it. Like I've gotten so much out of it, like in terms of ideas for blog posts, you're really like insightful and unique sort of like data and information from my guests. So it's really that leverage that is amazing. And also for whoever's listening, it can be a very tactical sort of sales approach, because you meet a lot of people, and it's an interesting like conversation. You can have you can share a lot of things, and at some point it can accelerate a lot of business. Like if you have someone you want to get closer to and discuss, you know, certain topics, maybe you're gonna find some common ground and then talk about it later, and it can get to a point where you can collaborate and maybe do business together. which happens a lot. Like we had a lot of opportunities come from the podcast, just from the guests that we had on the show, and which is really amazing. It was not a sort of planned thing, but it does happen.
Especially in times like this, you have to keep your eyes open for that. I mean, you know, I don't know how the situation is where you are, but I don't anticipate that I'll probably see any of my coworkers or that they will see our prospects or customers for the rest of this year, despite, you know, the vaccine and in states rolling back, you know, the rules. So yeah. I think keeping opportunities, you know, like that you said, like in these kind of different ways that we're not used to, it's not just about going to dinner and closing a deal, mm-hmm. but like you said, you know, being open to opportunities like, oh, I met someone, you know, on a podcast, or I watched someone in live, let me connect with them. Also, people are seeing that, right? I think the last year people have felt really closed off from being able to socialize in a normal way. And so people are more open to connecting in different ways.
Absolutely. So you've started broadcasting this on LinkedIn Live. How is it going?
We love it. We get more views typically from the lives than we do our kind of webinars. Now, it may be because we're getting a wider audience. The LinkedIn Live series is really not just geared towards prospects. We're not selling Gainsight. We're not talking about our platform. One of our main missions is to win in business by being human first. Mm-hmm. And so the goal of that, you know, those broadcasts are really to kind of share what other CEOs are doing during this time to kind of lead by example. And so I think it attracts a much broader audience of, you know, all sorts of entrepreneurs, people that are interested in customer success, or people that might be interested in the different CEOs we've been, you know, lucky enough to have, you know, big companies from Zora and Box, et cetera. Like people are excited. Slack, we've had, you know, they want to hear from those companies and from those CEOs in this kind of unregulated.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know if it's accessible to everyone, the LinkedIn Live, like, Is it something accessible to?
Yes. Yeah. So they broadcast live on our Gainsight page or our CEO's page. And then we also post them on our YouTube, which is totally public. So anybody can watch them.
Awesome. And do you have other tools that you're using for the podcast that you find cool, like maybe on the distribution or on the production side?
We're using our classic, you know, marketing channels. So sending out emails about them, posting about them on social media. And then our biggest one, I'd say we started a new thing this year is using a social employee advocacy tool. Typically your biggest advocates are your employees, especially for salespeople. They're out there on LinkedIn, they're kind of sourcing prospects. They want to look knowledgeable about the field to be able to sell. So we've implemented a tool that allows them to really easily like bring people back to the site to kind of absorb that content. It also gives them something to talk to people about, right? You know, hey, we just released this. It doesn't feel as pushy or salesy. It's not following up on a quote or wanting to do another demo, but it's really just sharing knowledge. Like, oh, look at this great video our CEO did with the CEO of X company.
Yeah. No, that's really cool. I mean, it's a podcast. It's such a huge goldmine of information. Like, it really deserves to be pushed and to be like, we published like 25 episodes. We have a very small audience. I mean, we're just starting Implement and we have not promoted it. And we already have like almost 800 listens on the podcast, just from people, from guests, like sharing it with their friends. And we're starting to get an audience like out of nowhere. It's really amazing. So
when you put some dollars behind it, like if you can get that kind of audience organic, you know, or even just, you know, putting together a promotional strategy around it.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're really excited to start doing that soon. Thanks for sharing this. I think it's become like one of the a very common channel for a lot of companies now. The podcasting is becoming something, you know, I'm not going to say like blogging because we're not there yet, but it soon will be like that. And I think it's just beginning. Like, I think it's a big channel and it's really exciting. And so what did you do before joining Gainsight?
So before Gainsight, I've worked at three other tech companies. All of those had kind of been in the B2C, you know, messaging space. So I started my tech career, I'll say, at a company that used to be known as Cheetah Mail, but now is known as Cheetah Digital. So I was there during kind of the purchase and the divestion from Experian, a big credit company. Then right before Gainsight, I was at a company called Braze, a New York-based startup. I think they now have like unicorn status, which is exciting. And they do, mobile messaging and email messaging for a lot of big retailers, financial services and things of the like. So okay. This is my first time at a B2B tech company versus one that serves companies that serve the consumer.
Yeah. So how is that transition going? Like going to B2B, how did you adjust?
I think the biggest adjustment was really taking the time to do a proper onboarding and learn about the space. So much in B2C, we can relate to our own personal lives, right? When I worked in messaging, I'm a consumer. I understand email marketing because I am marketed to, and I can use that to kind of inform how I give advice to clients. But in this case, I'm not a business, so I have to think about it and put on kind of a different hat. And so I think the biggest success was kind of doing onboarding with sales to really understand how they position it in the marketplace. How do you talk to customers? Especially in a content role where you have to really have some foundational knowledge about what you're writing about, that was probably really key.
Yeah. No, and I think it's much easier to go from that way than the reverse one. I don't know why, but I think it's like you. I feel like it's easier to sort of jump from that side, or maybe because I'm a B2B marketer and I really don't know much about B2C marketing, but it's cool. And so you've been with Gainsight, and you said that you were probably not meeting your team for a while now, and you guys are working remote. Like how did you sort of adjust to all this, and what kind of collaboration process you put in place with your team working remotely? How did you sort of manage this whole remote environment?
Yeah, my role has always been remote. So that part was a little bit easier. I was definitely used to traveling a lot more for work. So being kind of grounded, that's probably been difficult. So in terms of like setting up space in my environment to work from home, I've always had a home office. But the other things, like how do you connect with people? We've tried a number of things. We use a lot of tools in Slack that kind of force you to have these non-work meetings with people. Yeah. And I think you need that during the workday to kind of break up the back-to-back Zooms where you're just trying to bang out, work. Sometimes you just want to catch up with someone. What'd you do on the weekend? Or how are you feeling? Because it's not just about working remote, but we're also working through a pandemic. We're working through, in America, a lot of social justice issues. So it's not just, we're working from home now, but we're working in very with a lot of external stresses. So finding opportunities to connect to like the human nature of people, I think has been critical. And just over communicating. I'm on a text relationship basis with so many members of my team now, whereas maybe if we were in person, I wouldn't be so text heavy with them. Just feeling like, they're at your fingertips the same way you would if you were in an office and you could just walk over to their desk really quickly. Mm. So we try that. We try to make sure that meetings have a little bit of childlike joy in them. It's one of our Gainsight values. So whether it's starting off with like a fun icebreaker question, like what's your go-to karaoke song, or which celebrity would you want to be quarantined with? It just like you see, it brought a small smile to your face. That's what we're trying to do. It's a difficult time right now. How can we bring like a tiny slice of joy, to the mundaneness of, being behind your computer for 8, 9, 10 hours a day?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's really critical. And how did you feel about this the setting? Like, did you you were used to it, but do you feel like it's something that enabled you to reclaim a lot of time for sort of personal life and doing other projects and learning, or doing working out more, or taking care of family? Or was it more time at work in a sense?
For me personally, and for other people that are at my, that I've talked to, is actually more time at work. Mm-hmm. So it feels like because everyone is at home, everyone is quote unquote at work. And the workday does feel definitely extended, where I've had to be much more intentional about creating a boundary between work and my personal life. It could also be just a niche of personally, like I don't have children. So I don't have like a forced thing that says, oh, I got to log off at this time because I have to go make dinner for my children. But, you know, my relationship with my husband is just as important. And so I do set a boundary and try not to work too late. It's difficult. I feel that I'm very grateful, and as many people are grateful to have a job during this difficult economic time, but also feel like, wow, I'm actually working more than I ever did before.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's something that is super widespread, like what you just mentioned. Actually, sort of, you feel like you're regaining time on your life, but actually you spend also a lot more time disconnecting from work, sorry. And so it's really difficult. I feel like, you know, the best thing is setting up buffers, like, can be working out, can be doing spiritual activities that sort of are going to take really your mind off work and enable you to really walk away from thinking about work in general.
Definitely. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's not easy to do. Like, I've just started to understand this and really see the power of working out, and especially doing very simple workouts, like not something too heavy that you can't really maintain every day. So we do like a little bit of yoga, a little bit of Pilates or something like that every day, sort of for 20 minutes, just to get your mind off work and sort of say, hey, now it's time for the personal life. It's time for just to have dinner and just stop thinking about work now. And
done the same thing at home. We have an exercise bike that actually sits in our living room. And so we take turns. Instead of sitting on the couch to watch TV, we sit on the bike. So we're not missing time with each other. We're still next to each other, except one of us is actually moving our legs in my office. So it's my office/gym. But I agree with you. It has been challenging, but I have committed to at least 30 minutes a day moving my body. I got a puppy this year. So I make sure that I take him on like really long walks to get all his energy out. You have to force yourself to do it, because otherwise I could wake up and I could just immediately start working all day through the night.
Yeah, absolutely. Cool. And so you've, now that you're sort of, you had a experience in the tech sector, you've sort of covered B2C, B2B, like what are the next things that you want to learn, the next skills that you want to improve for your career?
I think the exciting thing for us at Gainsight is that we recently have a transaction with Vista. So now we're part of the Vista, equity partner portfolio. They've been able to do things like when Marketo became part of that portfolio, grow Marketo, leaps and bounds. So I think I'm excited to really see what it is to take a company from, up to like 300 million ARR, which is like one of our goals. And it's a really difficult like jump to kind of get there pre-public or pre-IPO or whatever that stage is, but really go to that next kind of financial event. So figuring out how to grow and grow fast and grow efficiently, I think is going to be a really fun skill to get under my belt in the next year or so.
Because right now you guys are, what's your turnover? Like the ARR, sorry, that you guys are?
We're at 100 million ARR, which is great. And so now, like, how can we take all of the Vista benchmarks and apply it, to our company?
Yeah, it's it's something that I. It's funny because there are so many stages of, like, I was talking on Friday with a VP of growth, that was basically started at a company. His name is Amin Makani. He's based in New York as well. And he started at this company where there was just like him, the CEO, and maybe three other people, and he went all the way to like taking the company public as a marketer there. And so it was really funny how he talked about the different stages of growth and how there were completely different businesses to run. Like, there are so many like plateaus you can reach and cycles, and it was just another set of skills each time to get the business at another stage and another stage. And sometimes what worked at a stage does not work anymore at all at the other. And so you need to reinvent yourself, sometimes just completely change you know, your approach to even to your product and to whatever you're selling. And it was really exciting to learn about it. So I guess it's going to be a challenge, but an exciting one.
Yeah, and he's exactly right. You have to reinvent yourself. What worked yesterday is not going to work tomorrow, especially in this landscape, right? We don't know what the next year is going to bring. And so trying to figure out what it's going to take to get there, what new skills am I going to have to develop? How am I going to change my whole approach to work? Is going to be interesting. And that's kind of the thrill of what people love about work attacking in the startup space.
That's awesome. Do you have an idea of like the skills that you think you're going to need to take on the challenge, or is it something you're still looking to?
I think I'm still figuring that out. I think in the broad sense, it's that ability to pivot. It's not being attached to like what worked well yesterday, and it's kind of trying new things and not being afraid of that. I mean, you know, there's obviously like not as much room for failure because, you know, we have, you know, a board to kind of report to, but being able to kind of fail fast and then move on and, you know, constantly pivot and being resilient, being like, all right, that didn't work, you know, dust yourself off and try something else. I think those are the kind of skills that you'll need in any kind of space to grow quickly. In terms of specific tactical skills, I don't have a clear answer for that yet, right? The challenge awaits in front of me. And so I'll see if I can rise to it.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I think, you know, everything is not about tactical and technical learning. Absolutely. It's about resilience. It's about, you know, even though I don't really like the term, but it's about that growth mindset, because I think it's just like used in all sorts of ways that are not really relevant. But this time, I think it is relevant, and it's getting, you know, exactly, like failing fast and trying things in a way that you can replicate, and also I think learning from data a lot, because you guys already have 100 million ARR, like you've grown like your company to this level. You must have a gold mine of data that, you know, just needs to be found and sort of and used. So yeah, I don't know. I feel like this is it's always easier when you have that level of revenue. You already know what kind of works, what doesn't work, and so but still it needs a lot of work to dig that data and to dig up that data and analyze it and know, you know, what to look for.
Right. And, you know, to being kind of the leader in this space, like keeping all the smaller competitors, you know, off our back. And also just, you know, recognizing that, you know, Gainsight kind of invented this space in a sense, like, you know, strategic customer success. And when I meet with people, it's not customer service. It's not just like answering, it's not customer support, but true like customer success is really like aligning with your customers and really figuring out what are the problems we need to attack together. You know, I'm going to make sure that you have the platform that you need, you're in-house at your company, and let's join forces on that. And Gainsight's kind of the first to do that. And so it's taken some time for the rest of the market to be aware of like, oh, customer success is super important. We need this if we intend to like grow a subscription business. So the fact that everyone is now online, people have been forced to kind of move to the cloud as a result of this pandemic, I think, you know, opportunity abounds.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I think it's really cool. Do you have any resources you advise people to look into, if you people you're following or books you've read recently or things that they should check out?
Books I've read, I try not to read about this space at all because I spend too much time on it. So I don't have any like professional recommendations around readings. In terms of people I follow, you know, I keep my ear to the ground with a lot of the venture capital firms. Yeah. A lot of VCs love to have their own blogs. So I read those. I'm trying to think of one that I was just reading this morning, thinking about the change in the sales cycle. Tomas, and he's at Redpoint, for example. Mm-hmm. I read him, you know, Ben Horowitz. Just a lot of them, what's happening in the space. Obviously they're the ones, right, that are controlling the capital. They control who's getting invested, what kind of companies they're invested in. So they have a very predictive, you know, nature around the space. And so I like to just keep up with what they're saying about the whole tech space, the cloud space, the SaaS space, et cetera.
Yeah. Yeah, and they absolutely. I think especially if your VCs can have a lot of great insights for you know startup marketers. I mean, you guys are not a startup anymore, but you have a lot of growth ambitions, and so in that sense, you are still a startup in a sense. But it's yeah, they definitely have a lot of insights and especially you know. If you want to understand what drives a startup and what drives a company that has to grow fast and scale, it's not always you know easy for a marketer to understand the whole what's the business behind. Like you know understand what the CEO is thinking about you know day and night and what are his or her priorities, what are they dreaming about, what are they and I feel like the you know VC content can be really a good thing to get into because you understand the stakeholders within your company, within your startup, and mostly the co-founder team or this like the executive like the top executive team, so yeah, I think it's a great advice. I feel like it's and do you have any podcasts or you know, any, do you listen to like podcasts or maybe other things that are not maybe related to work or to that you feel like are interesting that you could share with us?
Things that are not really, I do try to read, I'm trying to read a book a month.
Yeah.
So I'm actually reading a book. It's kind of like a satire on the tech startup space. It's called Black Buck. It's really okay. Funny. Podcasts that I listen to, I'm not a huge podcaster. Personally, it's just I only have so much bandwidth for consuming like digital content. So between the work, I'm tapped out.
yeah, for sure. And same for me. Like I mostly listen to I listen to a lot of podcasts, but they're not like work related. Usually, it's more of a you know just a comedy or people just making fun of things or whatever. So yeah, I totally understand that. And Black Book, I'll definitely check it out. I didn't know about this book.
Yeah, it's funny. It's by a new author, but basically he is an SDR at a new tech startup. Yeah. He talks about, he makes all the jokes around the startup culture, you know, the naming of the conference rooms, you know, something cool, edgy, and, you know, the sales huddles, just all the things. And it's like, oh, wow, from the outside looking in, you can laugh at yourself.
Yeah. I, you know, there's this guy on LinkedIn. I think it's Corporate Bros. I think his name is. You know him?
I follow them on Instagram as well.
Yeah, he's really funny. And yeah, and of course, like I think the best parody of startup world is Silicon Valley. I mean, the first few seasons were really amazing about, you know, I don't know if you've watched this. It's an HBO show. It's really amazing.
Absolutely, I've watched that.
Yeah.
And I really spent some time when I came out of business school. I worked on Wall Street, so I also love like industry. So I like to watch things that kind of where I can poke fun at the space I'm in.
Yeah.
And yeah, like you said, I need to kind of divest from always absorbing tech content because I do so much of that work. So I need to let my brain laugh a little bit from time to time.
No, that's really a great idea. I think we should publish a sort of list of of funny content or things to sort of take some distance from work and from like some of the things you hear at work and sort of laugh at the whole thing. Like it's really important to do it, and there aren't so many producers out there that do this well. You know, I think it's a great way to disconnect from work. Absolutely.
Yeah, I don't take myself too seriously just because I work in tech. You know, I try not to be like a tech bro, quote unquote.
Yeah, and no, I mean that's great, and you shouldn't be because. It's insane how many tech bros there are out there and growth bros and people, you know, really, taking themselves seriously. That's exactly what you said. And it's difficult to watch sometimes, really. Like, you're like, it's all great and it's interesting and you can find really great technical advice in some of these groups where you have you know these tech bros, whatever. But yeah, it's a bit painful. It's a bit absolutely. I definitely see what you mean. I won't name anyone, but I think you everyone can understand what I'm talking about.
No comment in terms of more details than that.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, Zoe, thank you so much for taking the time. We're almost done with the episode. Do you have anywhere, you know, people can find you if they want to connect with you online, on social media?
I'm on LinkedIn. That's kind of my only social media, because I've managed social media for part of my job in the past. I just don't play in that space personally. It's kind of funny. Once you become a marketer, it's difficult for people to market to you. And really, all of those spaces are places for people to market to you.
Yeah, they are, absolutely. And so on LinkedIn, for sure, I'll put your profile link on the in the podcast description. Thanks a lot for your time, Zoe. It was really great chatting with you, and thanks for taking the time.
Of course, thank you so much as well.